Chapter 9. After we'd cleared the air with Becca, she locked up her dorm room and we all headed down to the main floor of her building. We exited out the same way we came in, through the room with the desks and all the zoned-out students studying, and then we quickly hurried toward the parking lot where we'd left our vehicles.
I swear,
Janine grumbled as we hurried across campus,
if anybody put a single scratch on my baby.
Eventually, we got to the point where we needed to split off from Leah, but before she turned away, she cleared her throat loudly.
I don't suppose either of you would want to ride in the Grand Prix? I know, it's so much more badass than a Lambo or a Ferrari.
Somebody will have to. Our new cars only fit one passenger each, and I'm counting three of you that need a ride.
I'll go with Leah,
Becca offered with a wink.
I'm more of a Lotus girl anyway.
Very funny. I want to ride with Carter,
Val interjected.
We have a lot to talk about.
Right,
Naomi teased the brunette.
I think it'll be hard to talk when your mouth is full.
Why would my mouth...
Val began, but then her eyes widened and a blush crept into her cheeks.
I would never do that. That's way too dangerous for the driver.
That's what makes it fun.
Naomi winked.
I suppose I can go with Janine in the Ferrari.
Don't get too enthused,
Janine said with a roll of her eyes, and then she turned to Becca and me.
Where are we going exactly?
Becca gave us all her father's address, which we all quickly typed into the GPS apps on our phones. Then Becca and Leah bade us farewell and headed off to find Janine's Grand Prix. Meanwhile, Val, Janine, Naomi, and I all went back to the parking lot on the other side of campus, which was so secluded we hoped nobody had decided to fuck with our cars. When we got to the lot, we saw the two luxury cars sitting there at the far side, just where we'd left them.
Those are the new cars you bought?
Val's jaw dropped to the ground.
I thought you were kidding when you said you bought a Ferrari and a Lambo.
Why would we joke about that? I asked with a smirk.
I didn't realize Cincy's Jewel was doing that well. I mean, I know business is booming, but two brand new luxury vehicles, that's something else.
If it makes you feel any better, they're both technically used cars.
Oh, right. That explains things so much better.
The four of us approached our vehicles, popped open the doors, and then jumped inside. Val and I fastened our seatbelts before I twisted the key in the ignition, and my beautiful Lamborghini purred to life. Then Janine's Ferrari roared next to us, and the woman's tires squealed as she peeled forward. Huh, I bet she thinks she can outrace me, I said with a half smile. She's way wrong. I pushed my foot down on the pedal as I shifted the Lambo into gear, and there was the sound of screeching tires against pavement as my vehicle lurched forward after the Ferrari. Since we were still on campus, we tried to stay within the speed limit for a bit, at least until Janine and I got out onto the highway. Then, once we had nothing but open road ahead of us, I looked over at Val and gave her a cheeky grin.
Don't,
the brunette warned, as her green eyes narrowed.
There's no need to—
I didn't even let her finish her sentence. I slammed my foot to the floor and my engine sounded like a snorting bull as the RPM needle shot up and increased faster than a cheetah at full speed. Val let out a scream of terror as we barreled down the highway, though eventually the sound of sheer horror turned into a happy squeal. The brunette woman rolled down her window and then smiled from ear to ear as the wind blew her hair around until she looked like she could be the daughter of Einstein. Eventually, I slowed the vehicle down, and the were-turtle rolled her window back up and playfully tried to tussle her hair back into place. What was it you didn't want me to do again?
I need to get one of these,
Valerie said as she ran her finger along the sleek green trim. Maybe after the next paycheck. If business stays as good as it's been, of course.
Of course.
You said we had a lot to talk about, I said as the woman's words flitted through my mind. What's up?
Nothing in particular,
Valerie shrugged.
I just wanted to pick your brain and see what you thought about this whole situation with Becca and her dad.
Obviously, I think it's the right call. I wouldn't have come clean to her about everything otherwise.
I know that,
Val nodded.
But do you think her father will be as accepting of the circumstances as she was?
I don't see why not. You said he was a nice guy, right?
That's the thing,
she continued.
Mr. Bartram is friendly and fun, but if he's been able to keep a secret like this from Leah and I for so long, what else might he be hiding?
You're not worried about Becca's dad, are you? I asked, as I glanced at her out of the corner of my eye.
I'm just trying to be cautious, that's all.
Val frowned.
Especially now that Keck himself is after us, too.
All the more reason we're making this play. Maybe it'll blow up in our faces, but you can't just sit around and expect to take on two frickin' Egyptian gods with just the nine of us. We're a great team that's been able to defy the odds time and time again. But I don't think we're that strong yet. If those two assholes want war, then we're gonna need some reinforcements. Valerie pursed her lips.
I suppose your invisible eye will alert you to any potential dangers Mr. Bartram might pose.
Exactly, I smiled. Besides, if Becca's dad ends up being a threat, then I have full confidence we'll be able to contain him. A single druid-like man in his 50s isn't really on the same level as the creatures we've fought before.
Very true. We're not plants, either, and that seems to be the main thing the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus sacrifices nowadays.
I'd be really scared if I was a daisy, I winked. We drove on for several more miles as we followed the GPS instructions on Valerie's phone, and eventually, we arrived in the suburb of Linwood, which everybody knew was where the people who were low-key rich liked to live. It was an older neighborhood outside the city, with lots of vintage houses, low crime rates, and a booming economy. If Becca's father was well off, as Val and Leah seemed to claim, then it was no surprise this was where he chose to live.
That's it up there,
Val said as she pointed up the road.
The brick house.
As we came up to Becca's childhood home, I let out an audible whistle. The structure was only 2 stories tall, but it looked like something a younger version of myself would have always dreamed of living in. The house's exterior was completely brick, with a giant porch whose roof was held up by 4 red stone pillars. On top of that was a second-story porch in a plantation-style design, complete with a pristine white barrier on the edge. The property was surrounded by a 3-foot-tall black iron fence with several curves and spiky posts, and there were windows galore. "This is where Becca grew up?" I asked as we pulled into the driveway. "This is nicer than the buildings at school."
"It's a beautiful home. But if you like this, wait till you see the inside."
I killed the engine on my Lambo and waited for the rest of our convoy to arrive. Janine and Naomi arrived next, and then a few minutes later, Leah and Becca pulled up in the Grand Prix. As we all exited our vehicles, Leah made a scoffing noise.
I totally would have beaten you here if Becca hadn't made us stop to pick up a plant. It's very important to Daddy,
Becca explained, as she reached in and pulled out a small blue flower in a clay pot.
He loves it when I bring him new plants, mainly because he claims they put him at one with nature.
He sounds like a giant hippie.
Naomi snickered, but Leah and Val just exchanged an amused glance.
Just wait and see. You're not too far off.
For whatever reason, Leah's description of Becca's dad reminded me of Tommy Chong, and I couldn't help but laugh as the thought flitted through my head. Becca took the lead as we all approached the door, and then she pressed the small white doorbell located right next to the knob. The sound of the computerized ding echoed across the porch as we all waited silently, until finally I heard shuffling feet on the other side of the door. Then it opened with a creak to reveal Becca's father in all his glory. Mr. Bartram had the same pale blonde hair as his daughter, though it was short and curly. He had a long face with a pointed nose and a well-defined cheekbones. But his chin was covered up by the Zappa-style beard patch and mustache that he wore on his face. Becca's father wore a loose-fitting maroon Henley with the 2 top buttons undone, as well as a pair of gray sweatpants on his bottom half. All that was missing was the puka shell necklace. "Oh, Becca Bell," he declared as a crooked smile twisted up his face and his light blue eyes glowed with excitement.
"Daddy!"
Becca giggled as she threw one arm around her father and pulled him in for a hug.
"I brought you a gift."
The platinum blonde held out the flower for her dad, and Mr. Bartram leaned down and inspected it for a second. The man stared at the flower for a full minute as he ran his fingers along its petals and squeezed the leaves and stems. But finally, he let out a small sigh.
"It's perfect. Just like you, my dear."
"Not in front of my friends, Dad." "Hey, Mr. Bartram."
Leah greeted the man.
"Leah, Val."
The hippie man gasped when he saw Becca's friends. And then he looked at Naomi, Janine, and I.
"Ah, and you must be Becca's co-workers. I've heard a lot about you."
"Carter Hatfield." I introduced myself and stuck out my hand.
"Ha, Boyd Bartram,"
the man said, and he shook my hand firmly.
"Janine Beckett,"
Janine said as she shook Mr. Bartram's hand as well.
"Naomi."
Naomi said in a huff.
"Naomi..."
Boyd asked in a playful tone, but the witch wasn't having it.
"Just Naomi,"
she half-smiled.
"Well, just Naomi. Carter, Janine, nice to meet all of you. Any friend of my baby girl is a friend of mine. Now, don't just stand around outside. Come on in and make yourselves at home."
Mr. Bartram stepped inside the house, and we all followed him in a hurry. Once we were inside, I could see what Val had been talking about. The interior of the Bartram house was simple, yet elegant. It had light brown hardwood floors that looked fairly new, with bright white paint on every wall and ceiling. Small chandeliers hung from the ceiling of the room we entered, and just by looking around, I could see the surrounding rooms were very similar. The walls of the house looked to be large panels with a raised trim around the perimeter of each individual piece, and the ceilings were 10 feet high. Mr. Bartram led us into the connected dining room and kitchen of the house, where we were greeted with real marble countertops, stainless steel appliances, and a kitchen table made out of cherry wood. The cabinets were custom-made and featured intricate metal knobs, and every bougie appliance known to man seemed to be set up along the wall. This was definitely the textbook definition of a humble, rich home.
You have a beautiful home, Mr. Bartram,
Janine said as she marveled at her surroundings.
Yeah, it's not perfect, he shrugged, but we make it work.
Daddy, don't be humble. You worked hard to get this nice of a place.
I'm still shocked your mother didn't want to take it in the divorce. Though I suppose she had Roland's nice, fancy mansion to live in. Anyway, let's not talk about depressing stuff like that. Becca says you all wanted to talk business.
I do, I smiled as I took a seat in one of the nice wooden chairs around the table. Becca was telling us about your carpentry skills and...
Oh, where are my manners?
Mr. Bartram laughed as he slapped himself on the forehead.
Tea!
The man dashed over to a nearby cupboard and pulled out a metal teapot that he then took to the sink to begin to fill.
It's okay, Carter,
Becca said under her breath.
You can keep talking. Daddy's a wonderful multitasker.
Okay, I said with a raised eyebrow, and then I raised my voice as I watched her father bustle around the kitchen. Well, Mr. Bartram, Becca here told me all about your carpentry skills, and I thought of you for a new project that we're considering. You probably know about Cincy's Jewel.
Of course I know about Cincy's Jewel,
the man declared as he placed the pot over the stovetop and turned the heat on.
Becca Bell hasn't been able to stop talking about her new job since she got it.
Oh, that's good to hear, I said with a nod. Well, thanks to Becca and the rest of our employees, Cincy's Jewel has been a massive success, so much so that we're going to expand. All of the buildings we're looking at would need some pretty massive renovation, so we'll need a top-notch carpenter to get the job done. Is that something you'd be interested in, Mr. Bartram?
Why wouldn't I be interested?
Boyd smiled.
I'd get the chance to work with one of Cincinnati's hottest entrepreneurs, as well as help out the friends of my little girl.
We'd pay you, of course. Whatever your fees are, we will pay. I always believe that high-quality work should get a high-quality reward. Just name your price and I'll pay it.
Oh, maybe don't do that. Daddy's fees are already pretty high. How else do you think he could afford a house like this?
I appreciate the concern, I smirked, but I'm not budging on this offer. Boyd Bartram deserves whatever price he's worth.
I'm just trying to be a good accountant.
The platinum blonde woman shrugged. And you're a damn good one, I said as I put my hand on her shoulder.
Talent must run in the family, Mr. Bartram. I've never met anyone with a brain like Becca's.
I'll admit,
Boyd said as he pulled the steaming kettle off the stove and filled it with some black tea.
I'm not that great with numbers. I can do basic calculations and measurements and stuff like that, but nothing like what my Becca Bell is capable of. She definitely inherited her mother's intelligence on that front.
Don't be ridiculous. You're just as smart as me, Daddy.
Mr. Bartram grinned.
Now I've heard it all.
The carpenter had already set up a bunch of small teacups on the dining room table, so they were all ready to go when he brought the tea over. He poured us each a small glass before he placed the kettle down on a hot pad, and then he sat down across from me and took a tiny sip of his drink. I didn't want to be rude, so I followed suit. The tea was almost scalding hot when it touched my lips, but I powered through it and took a quick swig of the dark liquid. It tasted bitter, though it also seemed to have a hint of smokiness to it, and it was as smooth as silk. I let out a happy noise as I gulped it down, and then I placed the cup back on the saucer before me. So far, my invisible eye didn't register Boyd Bartram as a threat, and he seemed like a fairly normal man. Well, a man who worshipped an ancient Egyptian deity and sacrificed plants as part of an occult organization, but nowadays that was pretty tame by my standards. Now, the only question was when we'd shift the conversation to the paranormal. However, every business class I ever took taught me that you had to ease into uncomfortable topics, so I tried to strike up a more normal topic. So, I've got to ask, I finally said. Where do you come from, Mr. Bartram? How did you get into carpentry and how'd you wind up in Cincy?
The answers to both those questions are simple, Carter. I was born and raised just to the east of here in Williamsburg.
Oh!
Janine said with a grin.
I've been there before. It's such a charming place. I've been there too, believe it or not, for a say on work.
What do you do exactly?
Mr. Bartram raised an eyebrow at the witch as he sipped his tea. Naomi pursed her dark lips, and I could almost see the gears whirring in her brain as she tried to think up an answer.
I worked for a non-profit organization,
she half lied.
A sisterhood that believes in serving our Lord.
The rest of my friends tried not to laugh at the major stretch in truth that had just occurred, but Mr. Bartram seemed convinced.
The men in my bowling league are pretty religious, too. There's nothing like the bond formed by your brothers in servitude.
Amen to that,
Naomi said with a sly smirk.
Daddy!
Becca rolled her eyes.
You only answered half the question.
Oh, right!
Boyd laughed as he turned back to me.
I got into carpentry because, it was a skill I developed growing up. I was always great with my hands, particularly woodworking. So I started my own business out in Williamsburg, though I quickly realized I could make more money in a bigger market. Hence why I moved out to Cincinnati. Once I met Becca's mom, I decided to plant my roots here in this fine city and start a family. And I'd say that's worked out pretty well so far. Minus the cheating wife and divorce, of course.
Dad!
Becca said with a scowl.
Don't get yourself worked up. We're better off without Mom.
I know.
He sighed, and then he quickly changed his demeanor back to a perky expression.
Anyway, that's my story. Now, you have to tell me yours.
Well, there's not much to it, I shrugged.
Oh, nonsense. You're a young man who hasn't even finished college yet, and you're already the owner of one of the city's most successful institutions. And you're planning to expand? There's most certainly a story there, Carter.
Not really, I lied. I'm just lucky. My business partner, Ada, presented me with a great opportunity, and I took it. I had no idea it was going to end up the way it did.
You are humble, Carter, which I find refreshing,
the older man said as he studied me.
I know you've put a lot of effort into your success, and I would be happy to join you, but before I do, I want to know about the rest of you.
Naomi and Janine spent the next half hour telling semi-fabricated versions of their life stories. Janine explained how she was an orphan, though she never even touched the fact that she was a changeling. Likewise, Naomi told Mr. Bartram she joined her sisterhood because she always felt like she never fit in. But then she bailed on them once she saw how much better life was with me.
You already know our stories, Mr. Bartram, unless you want us to go through them again.
I think we're good, Leah, Boyd smirked. This seems like such a fascinating crowd here, and I couldn't ask for a better group of colleagues for my Becca Bell.
I heard Becca's heartbeat start to quicken, and the pulse in her body seemed to elevate. She fidgeted her hands as she looked over at me nervously, and I figured she thought it was time to finally reveal our true intentions to her father.
Carter and these friends are the best thing to ever happen to me, Daddy. They've given me great opportunities, and they've made me feel like a beloved member of their family, which is why I've stuck with them for so long. That said, there is another reason I brought them to you.
Oh?
Mr. Bartram asked as he crossed his arms across his chest.
What would that be?
Your bowling league,
Becca said in a stern voice.
I told them about your bowling league, Daddy.
Suddenly, Boyd's face fell into a deep frown, and his eyes went wide as the color drained from his face.
What?
He asked in an angry tone.
What did you tell them about my bowling league, Becca Bell?
It's okay, Daddy! They figured it out on their own, and they are friends.
Who are you?
Mr. Bartram barked as he whipped his head around and pointed his finger at me.
And what are you doing to my daughter? Is this some sort of sick game? You manipulate my daughter so you can get closer to me and my brothers?
No, I shook my head.
Boyd, don't call me that! Only my friends can call me Boyd, not liars who manipulate innocent women like these three.
He didn't manipulate us, Mr. Bartram. Listen to Becca. Carter is a friend, not a foe. He's a servant of Bath.
Now I know you're bullshitting me,
Boyd growled as he reached for the teapot in front of him, and my invisible eye told me danger was afoot.
The OLG kills all of Bath's servants before they even reach maturity.
In a swift motion, Boyd picked up the kettle of hot water and launched it toward me. Thankfully, Naomi was just as quick on the draw, and a beam of silver magic caught the sizzling liquid before it had a chance to scald me. However, Boyd wasn't done. The man jumped up from his chair and made a motion with his hands, and suddenly a bunch of vines broke through the floorboards and ensnared my friends and I in their grasps.
Fuck!
Naomi spat as she tried to move her limbs.
I didn't see that one coming.
I definitely thought he'd attack us with the flowers.
Janine sighed as she hung from her restraints. Val and I simply exchanged a look and a nod. These vines may have been strong, but we were both were-creatures who were much stronger. The two of us flexed our muscles as we pulled in the opposite direction of the vine's grasp, and all four of the things snapped with a dry crack.
What are you?
Boyd sputtered as he summoned more vines, but Val and I just shrugged them off like they were nothing. what Becca said. I'm a servant of Bast.
But that would make you a werepanther. The OLG would have killed you long ago if that were the case.
They tried. I killed them first, and all the creatures they've sent after me in the months since.
This is a trick. Boyd shook his head. The Panther Mother's children do not survive into maturity, not since the days when she walked the earth.
Apparently he still didn't believe me, but I knew just how to make him listen. I surrounded myself with black magic, and my appendages began to stretch and elongate. My muscles doubled in size, and dark black fur covered my body. I heard my clothes tear off my body as I grew, and soon my canines grew into points, and my nose became a cat-like snout. Once the transformation was complete, I bared my teeth.
Do you believe me now?
I asked the man, whose jaw was now on the floor.
You're a child of the Panther Mother. How is this possible? I told you! I killed the OLG fuckers who tried to sacrifice me to Khonzu. And now Khonzu's pissed off. So pissed, in fact, that he's teaming up with Keck to try and kill us all. Which is why I need your help, dude.
The vines released their hold on the rest of the group and then fell down to the floor with a dull thud. Almost as quickly as they had appeared, the green tendrils shrunk back down into the floor, and then the wood of the floorboards stretched out to fill in the holes from which they'd originated. Boyd fell down onto his knees as tears filled his eyes, and he looked up at me, leaned forward into a bow, and muttered something in a foreign language under his breath.
It's a miracle, he said through his tears. A true miracle of Nefertum and the Panther Mother. I must call up my brothers at once. They will wish to see this.
Now we were getting somewhere.